This is the Not Craft Podcast. I'm Josh Taylor, and I'm excited to share another episode of the Not Craft Podcast with you. On today's show, we have Christy Tillman, and Christy is an awesome designer and design leader who's currently leading the global workplace design at Slack, which is completely awesome because it's a whole new challenge for Christy, but also a new field for Slack. And in fact, a handful of different companies are starting to explore with this space as well. So I think Christy's a bit of a pioneer in this. So I'm excited to chat with her a little bit about that. Previously, she was the head of communication design at Slack, and she's built some teams over her career, which is really, really exciting. Before that, she was at IDEO and Puma and Reebok, as well as a handful of other projects that she started on her own or with other people. So she's really a self-starter, and I'm excited to kind of get a little bit of that knowledge and expertise from her. She's also had multiple stints in academia that have resulted in a handful of degrees in design and business. And so her knowledge and expertise runs pretty deep. She's built and led multiple design teams over her career. So I think that her experience speaks for herself, and I'm excited for you to hear a little bit from her and hear some of her story. So I'm excited for that. But just a quick note before we get started, there's a few ways that you can support this show. First, and probably the most obvious, is you can go add your own rating to iTunes, especially if it's 5 stars. Hopefully you're enjoying it, but really we'd love your feedback. The other one is by supporting us on Patreon. So we've set up a Patreon account, patreon.com/notcraftpodcast. And you can go there and support financially. We've got a couple little giveaways and things like that that you can get as extras. It's helpful for us to be able to keep this show going. So we really appreciate that. That's patreon.com/notcraftpodcast. But without any further ado, let's go ahead and jump into this conversation with Christy. Enjoy. Cool. Christy, thank you for joining. I'm really excited to have you on and kind of talk a little bit more about you and your experience, and especially some of your experience at Slack. So I think it'll be fun. It'll be fun to kind of dig right in.
Cool. Thank you for having me.
Yay. So workplace at Slack. So when you talk about workplace, you're talking just literally designing the workplaces that the people at the company work in. Is that right?
Yeah. So I think in a lot of companies, people call it facilities.
Okay.
We call it workplace, and basically it's the operational arm of the company. So our job is to make sure employees have what they need from a physical space perspective, equipment, tools perspective.
Okay.
We make sure the company is running from an operational perspective so that people can do their best work. Mm. It's a very multidisciplinary team of folks. You know, you got everything from your barista to your receptionist to your maintenance people who like literally move furniture around and fix things, to architects, to designers. So there's a variety of mix of people.
Wow.
That are responsible for making sure those things happen. So we call it workplace.
That's really cool.
And Slack is a global company. So we have several workplaces across the country and across the globe map, different countries as well. So even starting to think about like how those experiences are standardized, what kind of experience are employees having in terms of programs, and how do we start to talk about culture in this space? So this is a brand new team. I'm the first designer in the workplace group. And so basically I'm putting down a sort of a hypothesis of what I think workplace design should be at Slack, after having also done my, you know, homework and talked to lots of different people across other companies who have kind of a team that is charged with thinking about these things.
I mean, yeah, if you talk about it as facilities, that's a term I'm, I guess, more familiar with. Do most workplace or facilities teams have designers, or is Slack kind of branching out a little
bit? Yeah, so I think it's my understanding that probably not, especially in tech.
Okay.
But then I feel like, you know, I've talked to the folks at Shopify. They actually have a workplace. They have a team of folks. Their team, I think, if I remember correctly, sits with a people team. So they're actually not in the kind of workplace facilities area, but they have people who are charged with thinking about the employee experience from a deeper, from a design perspective. a really kind of good example of someone who's like deeply invested in the workplace team is Nike. And I think other people who have like really big, large, I think Salesforce definitely does. I've seen roles. Facebook definitely does. So really big kind of like multinational companies, right, who have like lots of real estate, have to think at least at a bare minimum, what should the experience be? Like, how should people check in? How should conference rooms be labeled? What should wayfinding be, right? So there's some like baseline kind of things that every company needs to kind of figure out if they have real estate that people do work in. And then, but I think what's interesting for us at Slack is because we are a software that is literally thinking about how people do work for the future, that has lots of implications on, you know, what do we start to try in our physical spaces? And what do we take from the product? And how does it start to literally inform some of our thinking? This is very kind of early stage, kind of futuristic type of talk. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we haven't gotten there yet. But like, I think what's interesting about the opportunity to do this at Slack is the link between our product and how what trickles down from it, which is very different than other places that aren't thinking about work. You know what I mean? So,
wow, that's super interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like almost taking the next level of, it's almost like there's this whole next level of, okay, we're talking about people's workspaces. Okay, now we're like talking about their real workspaces. And it's it's almost getting a little meta.
Yeah, very.
Wow, that's really cool. I'm super excited to hear just kind of how that goes and how it feels like a whole new frontier. And I feel like you could probably find so many people that have just been frustrated with their current experience. They're like, why is it this way? And just like recruit them. So like, you want to work on it? Come work with us.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, one of the things I'm most interested in this role is starting to really talk to the people that work at Slack and start to really get their feedback. I mean, use, you know, some traditional methods of kind of getting information, whether surveying or focus groups or one-on-ones, and starting to really kind of take feedback from our own employees about their experiences and how we can start to refine the way we do services for them to facilitate their work. You know, it's sort of like, you know, buildings kind of facilitate work. You go to them to do your job. But I'm really interested in how do the spaces that we kind of exist in, how do they become like really assets to your work? Mm-hmm. If you have to be in them, like, how do they improve your work? And starting to kind of really push the boundaries of that.
Right. And inhibit our work, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what's inhibiting your work? And then, like, what other services can we offer? Like, I'm also thinking, like, you know, like, what spaces should exist that we don't currently have that we should have? Mm-hmm. There's just so much there, and it's such an exciting thing to think about. And it's not a topic we talk about a lot in tech, which is funny because we spend so much time in our offices, like, you know, certain employers are even crafting their, you know, their services around keeping you in the office, you know, right. 3 meals, get your hair cut, don't have to go to the bank, get your dry cleaning. But like, okay, so like, how do people like exist in these spaces that we spend so much time in?
That's right. I mean, I feel like there's this whole, like you're saying, there's been all these services that people have talked about. Like, all of them have like some crazy service that they offer, back massages or dry cleaning or whatever. But less emphasis on, but actually just the work part of it. And when it comes to the work part, you're like, yeah, go into the factory of open desks and pick your desk and you'll work in an open space. And
that's totally true.
When that doesn't work for you, you can go into a big office, you know, a conference room.
That's so true. Yeah, there's not a lot of emphasis on how we do work. And you and I both know that like after like 2 weeks of being in a new company, all of those kind of perks kind of wear off. Like, super, they just don't. Yeah, they're not as meaningful. They sound great in the recruiting offer, but once you're in, they're like the least meaningful part of being there. So yes, I'm super interested to start to dive in that. I am literally like in my infancy, so don't ask me too deep questions that I won't have the answers. I'm literally like in the like, okay, here's a vision, here's what we can think about, here are all the exciting questions kind of part of my journey on this. And, you know, starting to think about like what types of people I need to bring onto a team to help me think about these things. So very, very, very early stages of this. Wow.
That's cool. That's really exciting. I'm excited for you. That's really cool. Kind of excited for that. Let me just go like a couple quick questions for you. Just kind of the general like history. I know that you've had a couple rounds of university and you've kind of taken your own career trajectory, which I think is really, really cool. And so, I mean, I think that's something worth, if you feel like getting into some of that too, I think it's, your trajectory is pretty interesting.
University job, university, university job. That's kind of how it's working up.
Okay.
I feel like the most interesting designers, and not to toot my own horn, but like when I talk to designers, usually the ones that are most interesting to me have like a weird wiggle path, right? Is that like usually like straight from design school to whatever they have had some previous life beforehand. So it was really, and I've told the story a million times, but it was really just like liking art in high school, being told that, you know, you can't do that for a profession and not really understanding how to convert that to something that you can exist on. And so going to kind of this traditional route of going to business school, then, you know, did a couple of internships and decided that I really hated that and dropping out of a more advanced program and getting my bachelor's and just leaving, and then getting a job and deciding I hated that job, and then going back to school to buy some time, and then saying, oh yeah, this design thing could work out. And, you know, in the middle of that, you know, I had tried to, when I was in grad school, worked at this museum and they couldn't afford a designer. And so I started playing with things for them, and I made art and brochures and all kind of marketing materials for them. You know, it was okay work, nothing mind blowing, but luckily to have the self-awareness that, you know, it was okay work, and I wasn't going to get really much better unless I like specifically carved out time to do that. So so decided to go to design school, and my parents were like, oh yeah, you're nuts for this. You've already have 2 degrees. Like, why would you do that? I was like, you know, I'm still young and time to take a risk. So I, you know, end up going to design school and really kind of fundamentally understanding why I was there, like, you know, working really, really hard and being in the studio all the time and being able to score some really key internships during that time. And that really helped propel me, because when I left design school, it was like right at the recession. And I had interned at Converse and they had offered me an opportunity to come back, and they pulled it like at the last minute because they couldn't afford interns because the recession was so bad. Yeah. And so I graduated with like no kind of schoolwork in my book. So because I interned and so much, I was able to graduate with like a book full of professional work. And
right. Luckily, which is way cooler than actual schoolwork.
Exactly. Luckily, I was able to, you know, get a job during the recession and just took whatever I could get, which I ended up in Canton, Massachusetts. I'm at Reebok, and I was a apparel graphic design apprentice there.
That's so cool.
And that's kind of where I just kind of landed and have really just been trying to figure it out ever since. Not really even having any foresight. I don't feel like when I was in design school, I had a good sense of all of the opportunities that were available. And I always say to people, too, that like, your imagination is like, and I'm holding my fingers, is like 3 inches wide, but like the opportunity space is like much bigger than you can possibly imagine. So like, why limit yourself to what you can imagine when the space around you is much bigger? So just sort of been just stumbling along ever since then and getting really lucky a lot, because like, for example, this workplace thing that I'm super excited about, that's not anything that I would have like woken up and said, you know, maybe I should apply to Slack workplace and be the first designer there, right? Something that fell in my lap. And, you know, the best opportunities I've had have all been that way. So I've kind of given up on kind of mapping things out. You know, I have a good sense of what's good for me and what I'm good at. And I use that as my compass for like filtering opportunities, but like being super open to things that, you know, I couldn't possibly think of.
How have you gotten like a good sense for who you are and what is good for you? That is like a huge statement. And I feel like I'm still for sure figuring that out for myself. How have you gotten to the point where you can even make that statement and feel, you know, like, you know, kind of what's good for you? And what was that like for you?
That's interesting. you know, I don't think, I'm trying to think, like, was there a point of, like, non-clarity to clarity? And, you know, I don't know. Like, there's a couple things I have to be there. First, I have to feel like I have a lot of autonomy in a role. So, like, I can't be micromanaged. Mm. I need to have a very supportive, I need to be learning something. I'm doing something new. I need a lot of space. I work really well in ambiguity. Like, and I've worked with all types of designers because I've hired all types of designers. And some designers, like, you give them a set of instructions, they'll go. And then some designers are like, they like to figure things out. And there's no, like, one way to be. Like, like, one of those things isn't good and one of those things aren't bad. But some people spin out in ambiguity. And I've seen that happen. And I'm the exact opposite. So I really like to be the person that comes in and says, oh, literally, here's 15 dots. Like, how do you connect them? So those kind of puzzle pieces. And, you know, I think maybe it's just because, like I told you and before we were recording, like, this is my third time building a design team from scratch. I haven't inherited a design team. So I've never gone into a place and they say, okay, here's your 15 person design team. You know, I haven't had that experience. So, you know, I might completely spin out on that experience. So maybe because I've just done this so many times that I've gotten really good at it, but it's what I enjoy. So there's, you know, I have to have kind of autonomy, a lot of ambiguity. I like starting from scratch. You know, I like to be well compensated. That's part of it. And like to be learning something, really. That's a huge piece of it. Feeling like I'm, like, having impact and actually making a difference. And, you know, and I don't think these are any special factors that no, I mean, you know, if you were to ask yourself, you probably would align with all of these, right? Like, so there's not really anything special about it, but, like, I kind of know it when I feel secure, when I don't. And I've been in situations where, a couple of those factors didn't exist and it was like literally hell on earth for me. So.
Right. Well, I mean, I think there's a couple in there that definitely are unique, or at least not everybody has. And I think the not wanting to be managed, I think some people really thrive, obviously, in environments where they have somebody kind of helping provide a little structure. And then the ambiguity thing, I think, is huge. And I think designers are definitely split. My experience is that they've been split on this, where some, I mean, really, really, really amazing designers, but they don't do really well with ambiguity. They kind of want to know what the environment is or what the task is. And once they know that, I mean, they do killer work. And then others, which, I mean, I think is obviously totally you, just kind of stepping into a whole new role that doesn't even really exist and carving out what the role is. Sounds like you're comfortable with ambiguity.
Yeah, super comfortable. Yeah, I definitely think designers are split. I've definitely, like, hired designers that say, oops, this is too much ambiguity for this person, you know. So, yeah, I've definitely seen that go good and bad.
That's awesome. Yeah, if we want to go ahead and dig right into one of your lessons for designers.
You know, I've been thinking a little bit about this, and, you know, design Twitter is always interesting fodder for conversations because the topics kind of continue to evolve and you can see lots of different people's opinions on them. And I think recently, I think it was Jared Spool who was talking about, or maybe it was Cap from, well, formerly from BuzzFeed, but someone was talking about designers having a seat at the table and designers complaining about meetings. And someone was like, well, that's where the table is in the meeting. So this continued conversation about whether design is actually having an impact on business and do designers actually have a seat at the table? I feel like this debate is still kind of up in the air. And, you know, one of my lessons that, you know, I've kind of been learning along the way, I would say that Slack for me has been, I would call it my most high stake job, meaning, you know, in terms of impact, material impact on business, you know, the most serious job I've had in terms of immediacy and volume and just scale. And so starting to really think about those lessons as you're giving kind of keys to different gates within the organization. And aren't even designers even good enough to be at the table? And that's something I've been asking. It's something I've been asking myself and thinking, you know, really hard about, because sometimes I'm just like, you know, I just want to design, or I just want to make something, or, you know, I just want to do X, Y with the team. Even looking, you know, and talking to other design peers of mine, you know, other companies, and even some who are even more senior than me, you know, past the director level, wondering if, like, we should even be at the table, and wondering if designers just aren't good business people. And, like, how do we go about cultivating some of those skills to actually legitimately understand beyond the conversations of, you know, the product decisions we're making and do they align with business objectives, but, like, how do you start to offer value just from a more strategic business perspective? So, you know, I've just been thinking about that as, you know, as we talked previously a little bit about, like, thinking about workplace design and how we kind of want to move from this idea of facilitating to not being an impediment and being an asset. And that really has a lot to do with, like, really understanding, like, where the business is going and what are the business objectives and how can we start to make choices that help, you know, folks align with that. And, you know, even just thinking about my own chops and, like, what value do I bring to the table and should I even be there? And, you know, so I don't know if that's so much of a lesson as is like a lesson learned yet. To me, it's a lesson in progress for me. And, you know, just like right now where I am in my career and just thinking about like what kind of legacy I want to leave at, you know, Slack, or thinking about a 2-year anniversary and kind of beyond, like, it's like, okay, you know, like, do I really deserve to be at this table? Am I bringing the right skill set to like to move the conversation forward from a business perspective? Just talking to my design peers, I feel like a lot of us just, you know, we don't even have the business chops on one, most of us aren't business educated. And two, I think, you know, I think there's something about being the designer that's just so craft leaning that like we almost have to fight some of our natural tendency to want to just be a designer. You know, we just want to make things kind of be in our world, and what that means is almost like fighting a natural tendency. What makes designers good is almost anti-business. You know what I mean? And so kind of really contending with that aspect of it. So that's a lesson I'm trying to move through myself.
Man, that's so interesting. I mean, there's a couple responses I have. And first is like, yeah, of course you deserve a seat at the table. And then the immediate next one is, wow, it's like such a great question to be honest with yourself about. And I think inherent in there is trying to understand what value the company needs. And like, is that even something that design can bring, and that can you even bring it? I think is a really interesting perspective that isn't just about, well, design is so valuable, therefore every business must need it. And really kind of coming at it from the opposite perspective of, you know, in your case, where is Slack and what does Slack need? And then because of that, where is design's role?
Yeah, totally. And it's not just Slack. It's a broader question for, I think, everyone should be asking themselves.
Right.
Just having had some conversation with folks who are like, have even been at the VP level at some well-known startups. I won't name any names because, you know, conversations happen confidentially, but like, you know, there's like, you know, I've talked to folks that like I really admired, and, you know, they all like, yeah, they had complete like insecurity around their roles, even at that level, because what made them good designers is not what would make them good business people. So I'm really just wondering, how do we kind of lean into making sure that we bring value to the business as we keep having these conversations about whether design should be at the table? Because I think, you know, I think the automatic reaction is, sure, we're designers, we're smart, we're problem solvers. And, you know, I mean, all of that is true. Like, are we really prepared to be at that table?
Right.
And sit in those meetings and do what it takes to kind of provide business value. So, you know, something I'm working through. I think lots of other people should ask themselves that question.
Yeah, no, I'm going to have to go back and reflect. How many times have I been at the table and probably shouldn't have been at the table? It's a good question.
That's interesting. Yeah,
that's interesting. I gotta digest that one a little bit. I think it's so interesting. Inherent in there is also, I think, a little bit of a definition of what the table is for you. Is it something around the table is where business decisions get made?
Yeah, I think it's like where business decision gets made, or more so where trust is given and confidence is given. So how do you become that person that gets tasked with, you know, a special project or to run an initiative or, you know, do X, Y, Z? Like, how do you become that person beyond even your like strict design duties, right? Like, how do you become, you know, someone's name who's mentioned, who is adding value to the business and making a strong impact beyond just like the product decisions that you are making with your team. I think that stuff is table stakes.
Right.
So yeah, that's kind of the stuff that I'm kind of moving through as I kind of, you know, mature and see more. Because I think the thing is like, I think what's happening for me personally is that, you know, I'm seeing more and more. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I really want to be involved in that.
Right.
Like, how do I get to be involved in that? And then, you know, you look at people who are getting involved in that and you're like, okay, what is it about them that makes them that person? And so starting to kind of really trying to understand, like, what is the kind of key to that door?
Hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. I think
just being a designer is not like good enough. Like, right. I don't think that's the answer.
Right. You're kind of inferring that a lot of the people that you're looking at that are doing this well are bringing more than just their discipline to the
yes.
table.
That's exactly it.
Which is so interesting because you have to, then inherently you can't think just as a designer. And I guess that's kind of true of some of the leaders that I've seen that I respect. They're people that see all of the different pieces of an organization or a business or whatever it is and kind of know which ones are important to use at which times.
Exactly. You just summed it up perfectly.
Well, that's such a good way for us to think and really kind of to be understanding, not just from a design centric perspective, but think first about the businesses that we are working for. And then, yeah, when is design relevant and when is it not? That's cool. I love that. Thanks, Christy. now I have to like go back and do some self-seeking a little bit.
It's so funny because you know how I feel like for me, and maybe this is a lesson, my second lesson, actually it probably is. And it kind of weaves into my 99U talk that we talked about earlier too.
Cool. But yeah.
This idea of like things coming full circle for me. So I always feel like something will happen to me and I'll hate an idea or a theme in my life. And then it's almost like, I've talked to people that I've mentored and I've always told them that there's kind of this idea of arriving too soon. So, you know, like we always say, oh, jump in if you're not thinking big enough, if you're not uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You should be scared of your dreams and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, to some degree, that's definitely true. But you know what? Sometimes like an opportunity can find you and seek you out and you're just wholly unprepared to make the best of it from a skill perspective, from a maturity perspective. You just haven't had enough experience or whatever, you know, whatever you're lacking. So it's almost like you can arrive too early. So for me, I've like had these themes in my life. And one of them is like something will happen and I'll get an idea and I'll think about it. And then it doesn't like click or for some reason I can't get it to move or go forward or propel. And then it'll come back around again and like, okay, now the time for me to be thinking about that thing. So what's funny about like what we just talked about was like I was in business school originally. I was in a 5-year program. It was like a 4+1 MBA. Decided that I hated business, hated wearing suits, dropped out of that program and got my bachelor's just so I could leave. And now here I am again as a designer saying, hey,
back there. I want to be at the table.
Exactly. I want to do business. Right. Like it totally dropped out of my MBA program. I mean, now I'm just like, maybe I should have got that MBA.
Oh, that's super interesting.
I wouldn't have like appreciated then or it would have, you know, it's like, it's now that I can understand its value that I'm like,
Right. Yeah. And you're like finally seeing it.
Yeah, totally. So I've had a couple of things like that in my life that like, it's like, okay, now that makes sense. Now this is a good time for this. I wouldn't have appreciated or I wouldn't have gotten this opportunity or I wouldn't have made the best of this opportunity if it had happened to me 3 or 4 years too soon, right? So there's just a lot of there's a lot to say for timing of things, right. A lot to say.
I feel like that's paired a little bit with your ability to deal with ambiguity and it seems like you're a type of person that's just always taking on the new challenge and kind of going full steam with whatever is right in front of you.
Yeah.
And you kind of do that over and over and over again. And sometimes you're like, I'm not quite sure why this is. And then later it becomes really, really obvious that, that was because it totally fit in with this other thing that I was already kind of had been thinking about for a couple of years, maybe.
That is totally true. I think you nailed it there. I wish I could get faster at that though.
Faster at knowing why we're making the decisions we're making.
Yeah, if I could get that circle to be tighter or faster, I'd accomplish so much more.
If you can figure it out, let me know. I would love to know how that works. Awesome. I love that. So lesson two, kind of keep your eye out. Some things come back around full circle, maybe when you're least expecting it.
Yeah, totally. Like almost like a boomerang. The boomerang effect. Awesome. Let's call it that.
Look, you just coined a term.
But I mean, also too, I think there, you know, there's other lessons in that too. Like, don't give up on things. Timing is important. Sometimes, you know, it's not you. It's really just timing. And kind of like being, I guess that goes back to ambiguity, just being okay with things being unclear until you can make them clear.
Right.
Sometimes it just takes experience and time.
Right. And sometimes you just got to go through something and go full steam ahead, totally. Not knowing exactly where it's going to, or exactly all of the details of what's happening.
Exactly.
That's really interesting. I think in some ways that also kind of ties back to what you're saying about having a seat at the table. I think honestly, a seat at the table for some people is really just a way to say I'm uncomfortable with not knowing all the decisions that are being made. And they're trying to get back in there, and sometimes they need to just kind of do your work. Somebody else will figure out all of that stuff, and you just keep doing your thing.
You know, I never thought of that. That's interesting.
I mean, I don't know if it's correct, but
no, I could totally I could totally see someone who had like a personality where like control drove them. Like they were very controlling, or there was low trust.
Right.
And, you know, they just had to be a part of it so that, you know, they could ensure it was being done right or to their specifications, or, you know, I could see that. And, you know, to be honest, it's almost like, I think some of that conversation, especially when it comes to design, is driven by that. I mean, I've seen designers really kind of like have a low opinion of people who aren't designers, or, you know, designers know everything. Exactly. Designers know everything and no one else knows how to design, and we're the only designers, and calling other people who aren't designers is a slap in the face to us. And, you know, all of that kind of rhetoric that gives design kind of this demigod status. I see that all the time. So I could totally see some folks thinking their seat at the table is definitely about entitlement.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think that, and I actually saw another interview with you that where you actually talked about this a little bit, is that we actually, designers, often we have other equals and superiors, and we're often uncomfortable with that. We think that our craft is the pinnacle for every business and all businesses. Which goes back to that first point that you're making, that, yeah, maybe it's not. And maybe we need to be a little bit more realistic and understand what value we really bring.
Yeah, I think John Maeda's reports, I would love to see 10 years of them. I wonder if anyone else is tracking kind of design's impact on business.
Yeah, it would be an interesting, there's so many different vectors by which you can think about it. There was a while ago that I thought maybe you could track everybody, like every employee's monetary value to the business. And then I shared that with somebody and they pretty quickly told me that that's not a good way to measure, measure people. That will lead to some bad decisions at some point.
Oh yeah. I could see that running amok really quickly.
But some way to measure true value of design is pretty interesting. I know some people are thinking about that. Christy, tell me something that you've seen that you'd love to kind of warn designers about.
So, I mean, I have actually pulled back a lot from thinking about design in the sense of it as like this thing that exists on its own and not being a part of a kind of a larger ecosystem in which it serves. So I don't know. I know we follow each other on Twitter and you probably have seen me tweet a lot less. Just because I have not been wanting to engage in some of these conversations. And it's actually pretty helpful in kind of removing myself from kind of the design Twitter kind of conversation landscape and sort of just like immersing myself in the real world and dealing with real people and real problems. And obviously having a design lens, because that's just how I think. But like not talking about design as a self-serving thing that exists on its own. And I think that's actually been really helpful for me. I get a little triggered sometimes by the conversations that happen on Twitter. They just feel like they're so self-serving about ego. So, you know, I would warn designers to kind of pull back and immerse themselves in real world and talk to real people and have less discussions about this design thing as its own. Because design is just meant to serve, right? And solve problems.
Right.
And some of these conversations just aren't healthy or helpful. And so definitely kind of like immersing yourself in business or in hospitality, you know, and there's just so many different lenses that you could like look through to kind of help build kind of your vocabulary and push your perspective that aren't labeled design. So I've kind of just been backing up from a lot of that, even design events. I feel like one of the things that kind of happened when I moved to San Francisco was like this, the idea of design socialization. Like I get invited to so many design dinners and design events. I like, it is unbelievable. Like who is funding these things?
And who has time to go to them all?
You know, I'm thankful that people think that like I'm worthy to be in the room and to talk to, but like I just can't believe the amount of design socialization that happens here. It is unbelievable. Yeah.
Right.
And so like, you know, I just don't find that stuff particularly helpful. You know, there's something to be said with the being with people from your craft and talking about craft and, right. You know, sharing tips and that sort of thing. But like this like weird kind of bubble that like people have created here, I just like, I'm not with it. So I prefer to be with normal folks. You don't talk about their profession 24/7.
It's so nice.
So that's my warning to designers, especially the ones that live, that are in tech and in San Francisco and the Valley, to kind of pull back a little bit and do other shit.
Find somebody that's not a designer and make them.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. I mean, it really ties in with a lot that you said tonight. I think that this idea of just understand that there's more than just what you do. This isn't a design-centric world that we live in. There's other people that do other things and don't care at all about our designs. Yeah, it's something that we need to all like rock. And talking with other people that aren't designers is a good way to kind of.
Yeah, I think for me, it's almost, you know, just thinking. And one of the things that I really wish, if we were going to actually talk about design in the industry, is interrogating kind of like our identities and our political identities and how who we are shapes how we think and how we make. That's something that we don't do at all. So for me, as someone who's just like completely in the margins, like, you know, there aren't many, if maybe two other kind of even semi well-known Black female designers that like, can you name any other ones besides me and like maybe Maria Gaddis that works at Netflix?
I've been working on building a list. That's maybe the only reason that I could have a quasi good, but you're 100%. I mean, I think this is
You have to build a list, right? People oftentimes will send me a note saying, hey, can you introduce me to someone else? So as someone who lives in the margin, it's almost like I can't even find myself immersed in design that way because, you know, I'm always kind of like an outsider anyways. So I think it just shapes how I think about things.
Oh, that's a really interesting perspective. So like from your perspective, you're not walking into a room full of other designers saying, oh, I 100% identify with all of these people anyway. So this intrinsically is a part of how you've been approaching it.
Totally. So I think that really has something. Like I have to develop other interests and have other people around me because it's just such a polarizing experience being a Black female designer in tech that like I wouldn't survive if I was just like 100% immersed into the design community.
Or even just the tech
community. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's not that it's any more diverse if you step one ring out further.
Yeah, pretty much.
Cool. Yeah, I totally see that. And I think that being able to kind of see through that lens as we go to all these meetups, I think is really valuable. Christy, thank you. These are really awesome. I am going to go back through and listen to these because I think this is super, super helpful for me, super valuable. I love getting to be able to talk with you just because it's so, so insightful. So this is good. I hope everybody else finds it as helpful and insightful as I have.
Oh, thank you.
For those that are looking, I always like to do this at the end. You are building a team at Slack. And if people are looking, wanting to work with you, how can they learn more? What's the best way to do that?
When the time is right, everything will be on slack.com/careers.
Okay.
And then they can also check my Twitter because I would definitely be tweeting
I'm sure you're going to put something out there. That's awesome. And what is your Twitter and what's the best way to follow along with you?
My Twitter is at Christy, K-R-I-S-T-Y-T. Christy T.
Cool. Awesome, Christy. Well, I really appreciate it. This was fun and can't wait to meet up with you in person.
This was super fun. Thank you for having me.
All right, that is our show for this week. Thank you again to Christy for coming on the show, sharing some of your experience and some of your story. That was great. A couple quick reminders for you. You can follow along with us at Knotcraft Podcast on Twitter. Also, you can subscribe any of the places that you normally subscribe. Don't forget to do that, iTunes or one myriad of all the different apps that are out there. And also, don't forget about Patreon, patreon.com/knotcraftpodcast. You can get a lot of great behind-the-scenes things, a little bit of extras that we have for you, and support the show so that we can keep this thing going. So, until next time, hope you have a good week, and hope these things have been really helpful for you. Enjoy.